I'm Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to actor Tommy Ford, who most people will remember for his role as best friend of Martin Lawrence on the long-running Fox sitcom, Martin. His latest project, a web TV series, casts him as a reverend with a history of straying from his wife, but who now seeks redemption, albeit from the wrong people, in the club. Stick around. Will you root for redemption, ridiculous, or a little of both? Is it wrong that in watching Tommy Ford's new web TV series, The Club, I found myself rooting for his character, Reverend Lamont Holmes Jr., to fail? This is a married man of the cloth, emphasis on man, who loves women and has been with Siamese twins and prefers Oprah over Hallie. We learn this when he applies for membership to a men's club for philanderers whose inspiration comes from Bill Clinton, among others. "We are hounds," exalts their leader, played by Mark Christopher Lawrence, whom audiences will know from his 5-year run on NBC's Chuck. "We don't want a way out. We want a way in." And sharp-eyed TV fans will recognize Ford from his long tenure opposite comedian Martin Lawrence on the Fox sitcom Martin. But instead of the goofy sidekick, Ford has grown into leading man maturity and gravitas, which makes him even more convincing as a religious leader led astray by his man parts. The Club is described as a faith-based comedy, but it is not intended for the whole family. Its humor is bawdy, adult, and coarse, as when Lawrence's character says of Ford's reverend, "You're getting more tail than a toilet seat." As for Ford, he's always stayed busy, whether starring in films, in front of the camera, or expanding his career behind it, building a reputation as a director and producer. Tommy Ford, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so much, Mr. Media. I'm excited about being here.
I'm delighted to have you. And can I get a boom shakalaka boom, brother?
Boom shakalaka boom!
All right, so at least two of us know that I watch the show now.
Yes, sir, we do.
All right. Well, and before we get into talking about the club, it occurs to me, I don't know that much about you, and I'm figuring maybe some other people feel the same. Where are you from? Tell us a little about yourself.
No, I'm from Los Angeles, California. I'm from a huge family. My immediate family is small. I'm the oldest of four, but my grandmother had 15 children. Therefore, I have over 100 first cousins and on and on and on. So I come from I think some of the favor that I've had in my life and my career is because I've always known I've been loved. I've always had someone to support me. I've always had an audience, so to speak. So that's been a great advantage for me.
And were you performing in front of family at a young age? Was that the kind of ticket in?
You know, not necessarily in front of family, but when I did theater, there's time, you know, starting off Equity Way with theater, small theaters, that you invite people out. Sometimes my family's the only family out in the audience. But I was kind of shy, so it was difficult to do directly in front of my family. So it made it easier when I became someone else. So that was an easy outlet for me.
Interesting. And, did you always plan to do acting? And
interestingly enough, I always thought I was going to be a preacher when I grew up.
Really?
Because we were very rounded and well-rounded in the church, and that was a strong foundation for us. So it's interesting how not only how acting became my ministry, but more importantly, how this character was so important to me because I understood this man. I understood his challenge. And even more than his challenge, I understood that beyond him being human, he still had a message.
Hmm. All right. And before we get to the club, I know from our setup today, you have a daughter and a son.
That's right.
Married?
That's right. Yes.
All right. And you're not in LA anymore.
Well, I'm all over the place, to be honest with you. I'm between L.A., Atlanta, and Miami.
Wow.
So, yes. So it's very exhausting. So I'm here in L.A., in Miami for a few days, hugging, kissing all my kids. And
folks,
I'm
he doesn't know where he is. I think it's
exactly. I'm in my, yeah, in Miami. there's a Miami Web Fest this week where the club will be featured. Then I dash back off to Atlanta to film an episode of a show that Brandy's doing. And I head off to Washington, D.C. to lead a youth march for peace. And from there to Chicago to read and empower young people. So I'm always going, always doing.
Got a lot of interest.
A lot of interest.
All right. Well, and so you – okay, well, one more question. So you
okay.
About that, you said you thought you'd be a minister. And now some people think that there's not – that's kind of a fine line between ministry and show business anyway.
Well, there is a fine line. However, I think it's not the obvious, meaning to me that fine line comes between – there's a group of folk who come to hear your message and watch your life, your lifestyle, in order to duplicate that, to be empowered. And I think the same thing applies when it comes to celebrity, that celebrities are trendsetters. Young people, many people mirror the images of celebrities. They want to dress like them, talk like them, walk like them, imitate, duplicate many of their behaviors. So in that regard, to me, they're very similar. Now, I don't necessarily want to comment on whether I think all ministers are actors. That's not my business. But I do think that lifestyles are very interesting in the sense that they're very reverend. There are very, people look up to them and they follow them. And they are indeed trendsetters as well.
I get the sense that maybe your Reverend Holmes, he went to the church of Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah, he's dunked a few. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And I'm not talking baptism either.
No, I didn't think so. No. Is the club, as we kind of work our way into the club, is it the kind of show that probably couldn't exist if there was no internet?
Well, I would say that 10 years ago. But today, when you look at many of the hit shows, the more you push the envelope, it seems like the more exciting it becomes. You look at reality shows, I mean, the sky is the limit to the garbage that you see on these reality shows. So I don't think anything shocks the public anymore. There was a time when something like this would be like, oh, this is taboo. But I think that time was long gone. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun anymore. There are no secrets anymore. There used to be a time when we used to protect our young people from certain language, from certain behaviors. But I don't see – you can watch regular TV and see naked backsides now. So there's not much protected anymore.
Damn that NYPD blue.
Damn that NYPD blue.
Although that Charlotte, I can't think of her last name, the blonde.
Yes.
This is some nice backside. Anyway.
Yeah, she was my next door neighbor in L.A. So.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah, well.
Wow, okay, that's weird that I pulled that reference out of the blue. And she was your next door neighbor? Wow.
Just for a couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. I don't know where to go from now.
Yeah.
Well, so – let's talk a little about this. It's kind of this. It's the show is a hybrid. There's 4 to 5 6-minute episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the audience intended for something that short?
Well, it's amazing how webisodes are growing tremendously because people spend more time now in front of their phone than they do their television. So it is equipped, especially for those doing rapid transit who are, you know, many countries that no one drives in many countries. And you have a lot of the Asian countries where there's just billions of people. Most of the people are on, you know, you can go to the New York for that matter, but most people are on rapid transit with a phone in their face. So often it becomes very common for those people to look for entertainment, look for something to do while they're in transition. And often they're very quick little things that they can get a hold of and become fans of. So we talk about kids who are constantly in the car, are constantly on the move. So everything is changing from standing in front of a television now to either being in front of a web screen, many times at work when you're supposed to be working, or a phone screen. So the audience is growing tremendously because we have so much transitional time now. where there used to be times 4 or 5 o'clock, you're at home and you're doing family stuff. That doesn't happen anymore. And then once this family, you know, I know my kids spend more time doing homework once they get home. So everyone go to their designated areas. You know, he's in his room, she's in her room, I'm at the computer. So that's what happens, and that's what these shows are built for people who are in transition.
And how do you monetize like a 4 to 6 minute show?
It happens very similar to television by commercials. What they do is they'll know based on your audience if people are enjoying your show. So at that point, they will contact you very much like YouTube, so to speak. When they see there's a high volume of hits, they're going to come to you and say, hey, we have some advertisers who like to pay to run their stuff on your during your time slot, so to speak. So it's very similar.
And who is the audience for the club? Who do you guys have in mind? I know you're not only acting in it, you're an executive producer, you've been involved in the whole thing. Who's the intended audience?
Here's the advantage of webisodes. It's the World Wide Web. So there are people in the military, there are people in all walks of life. I have my writing partner. Her name is Susan Sojourner Collier, Emmy-nominated writer, but she's in Dubai teaching, so she can't turn on the television and see people speaking English. So there are many people who are worldwide who are our audience, who are wishing that they were at home, but thousands and hundreds of miles away, so it gives them an opportunity to get a small piece of home. So our audience is broad. Our audience can go from military to business folk, from people who travel the world, from people who travel the nation, from people who travel on a subway or a bus or a taxi. So our audience is pretty broad because there's so much time now that we're in a world now where there's no such thing as being patient. We want it now. So every time opportunity we have, we're going for our hip. Where's my phone? That's our audience. Right. Our audience are those people who have been on the go constantly and looking for something to do in between time.
Okay. And we should talk. I don't think I've given it enough play. This is the club is basically, as it starts out, it's four men. One, two, three. Yeah, four guys who have this this club for guys who love to have extramarital affairs. They're all married. They all have their thing. And as the story opens, your Reverend Holmes shows up and he's outside and he's being considered for membership. I don't want to give anything away, but you know what's motivated him? Why does he want to join this group?
The motivation is sincere, first of all. Reverend Holmes was preaching a sermon. A guy jumps up in the middle of a sermon and says, oh, the Lord directs your steps. Under your door, the Lord direct you to have sex with my wife and so many other wives in this congregation. Was that the Lord, buddy? And he pulls out a gun and he approaches the reverend, and there's a struggle in the pulpit. The gun goes off and the husband is killed. And instantly, Reverend Holmes realizes that my calling, I disrespected my calling. I disrespected God, I disrespected my wife, I disrespected the ministry, all of my members, and he is sincerely sorry. That's the first thing we need to know. He is sincerely sorry and saying, how do I fix this? How do I get this right? And it has to go beyond just prayer. So what happens is Reverend Holmes goes to get some psychological help. And they say, listen, not only do you need therapy, it's good. We suggest that you go out. And there are these therapeutic groups with people who think just like you, who are looking for healing just like you. So he's driven to this group looking for help, looking for those who can say, listen, we are of like minds and like hearts. So that's why he's attracted to this group. He's not looking for a group of frauds. He's looking for a group of sincere men. And I think that's what I love about Reverend Holmes is he is sincere. He really, really does seek change. In fact, after it is revealed to him that these cats are not even real, that's when he says, I'm out. I can't do this. I wish you all luck, but I have a calling and I am determined not to mess that up. So that's what I respect about Reverend Holmes.
Of course, the four guys in the club who are already in the club and who are going to vote on Reverend Holmes, their thing is they're thrilled that this guy wants to join because he's got a reputation for being such a ladies' man that he got into a fight on the pulpit and shot a guy.
Yes.
I mean,
he's truly a man in the cloth. You should see him between two sheets.
But here's the thing. Here's where it gets confusing, I think.
All right.
At least to me a little bit. The humor is pretty crude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty crude. I mean, my favorite line – wait a minute. I got it here – is – okay. I mean, this is more American Pie than Tyler Perry. Just for
hello.
One of the guys says, what part of she was shaking her ass down at the titty bar, don't you understand? And that's talking about the reverend's wife.
That's First Lady.
Yeah. The First Lady of the church. You know, do you worry about this offending the same people that it's intended to appeal to? Or – you know, that's the fine line I wonder about.
My question to you is, have you listened to the radio lately?
Well, I mean,
have
I'm
you
not offended.
Watched television lately? Sure. Have you listened to music lately? There's a commercial on right now about a woman selling – they're selling a blazer, a razor, and a woman is standing in front of little bushes with a razor, and it looks like she's clipping the bush, no pun intended. So – do I believe that we're pushing it now? I think that the bar has been set. I think that there is so much. We have a man running for president who doesn't hold his tongue about anything at any time. We are watching sports now where on ESPN, you can see a guy being drafted and turning around and kissing another man. So there's nothing that we haven't seen so far that can shock us. So are these things reality? Sure, people live like this and they speak like this. I think this is what's going to make it unique, is that when you talk about faith-based, often they speak in vocabulary that's the vernacular is not really common. So we want to make sure that it felt genuine. If these guys are indeed hounds, then what do hounds do? They bark. So we're going to hear some howling. Otherwise, they would not be hounds.
Right. I mean, they act like men. There's no doubt.
Yes.
They totally act like men when women aren't around. And I mean, that's, you know, I enjoyed that. The thing that's
I enjoyed that.
I mean, I did. You know, I love those kinds of movies.
Yes.
I was actually reminded. I think you'll appreciate this. I was reminded of the first time I saw Blue Collar with Richard Pryor, and he plays like six characters, right? And, you know, one minute he's playing this really scandalous guy, and he's playing the preacher. I mean, right, you know, so I mean, I thought about that movie. And one of the things that shocked me about when I saw that, and that would be like 1976, 77.
Hello?
I'm an old guy. That's why people can't see me. I don't want to see how old I am. But I mean, you know, I was just shocked by the overlap of the minister, you know, oh, come to church, blah, 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 you know, the whole thing. And then all the other, you know, the raw sexual stuff that's going on with humor, it just seems like there's a line there that maybe the audience that is more faith-oriented, it will be offended by it, whereas the audience that wants the humor is not.
You know, it's very possible. However, we have to remember that the church is the hospital. Sick go to the hospital. So if you're perfect, you have no reason. You don't need to be in church. You need to be with the Pope. He's on tour now. So the church is a place where people go to get fixed. The church is a place where people go that need help. They're coming to get help. So that means that you are hurt people. So the church is filled of hurt people. The church is filled with people who are damaged, who are irregular. They didn't make it to Neiman's. They're at Walmart. So the church is filled with people who are not perfect. So that's why one of the things I loved about this piece, the original writer of this piece is my favorite playwright in the whole world. I did my very first play with him. His name is Kenneth B. Davis. And I did my very first play with him when I'm 17 years old. I'm 51 now, and I'm still doing his work. So that tells you how I feel about this playwright. And then again, when Mr. Ilunga took over, he rewrote to a screenplay. However, what I love about both of these writers are their ability to be honest and to be real, not necessarily to take the road of being most popular or politically correct, but to – and as you said, it is a language that is attractive to us as men because like, oh, man, Yeah, I've heard that one before. Or I know someone who's just like that dirty old goat. So I think that's one of the things that this thing captured. Now, whether it offends someone or not, it's possible. However, again, when you look at, I remember the first time I saw Empire, and I'm watching music, and I saw two young thugs kissing, and I'm like, what in the world is going on here? Incidentally, Lee Daniels started my career. He was my manager. Really? Before he was a producer or a director, he was a casting director, then a manager, and then moved transition into directing and producing. So he started me off in this business. So there's nothing too shocking nowadays. I tell you, some of the things that are on television right now completely shock me. And I think that we have reality TV to thank for that, because we're continuously pushing the envelope.
Wow, I'm looking for some more name dropping now. Wow. We got the blonde from NYPD Blue earlier. Lee Daniels, that's pretty good. Obviously, a little bit I'm going to ask you about Martin. How could I not at this point?
Hello.
Hello. But this is a six-part series. Was there mm-hmm. Is there any intention of doing anything more with these guys in this situation, or is this self-contained and done?
No, we have big dreams. We have a film, for a full-length film prepared. We also have a script for a sitcom. That's really our goal, is to transition into a television sitcom. So we start off here to show that there is an audience, to show that we have the ability to start and finish something, that these characters are interesting, and that the actual world that we're living in, that there is an interest in it, that there is dialogue about it. And from that, we're hoping that we can transition into television and film.
Okay, so there is a chance we can see these characters again.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
But the names may be changed to protect the innocent.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't want to give away, you know, anything from the ending. It just seems like the first four episodes are like one piece, and then the last two are sort of a different piece. And I'll be honest, this is why I brought up – that's why I asked the question at the beginning. I kind of was hoping that we're going to continue along where the first four started, because
the fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it is fun. It's very fun, and it's men. It's just men being men, and then
absolutely. And I think what was trying to be accomplished there was that the wages of sin is death. Meaning, we cannot glorify these guys for all the horrible things they've done. They have to pay a price for it. So, and I agree. Every week we're going to see the first four episodes. Because once we have closure to it, it's the movie is over. We don't want to see it anymore. So I totally, totally agree that the first four will be how every week we want to root for them to fail. So there's no story without conflict. So if Humpty Dumpty had not fallen off the wall, we wouldn't have given a hoot about what happened with all the king's horses and all the king's men. It's about the conflict. So that's where the conflict really lies. But in the original story, there was a beginning and a middle and an end. Sitcoms can't resolve everything. We have to keep it moving so there can be conflict.
Right. We have to live in hope that we're going to see the reverend's wife shaking her down at the bar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good boy.
I mean, you know, without that, without hope, you know, it's like, are we going to see Maddie and David kiss? No, we want to see the minister's wife down at the titty bar shaking her ass.
That's right.
I apologize, Mom. I'm sorry you had to hear that.
Hello.
So, so this particular six episodes, is it more intended to demonstrate a concept, or is it intended to make money?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think what it does is it shows that there's a potential to have life, to continue on. And the first four episodes especially, we're like, oh, what in the world? They've gone this far. What are they going to reach any resolve? And then so they will. The hope is that we will continue to root for these zany guys, whether we're hoping that they ever are healed, or we're hoping that we can reveal more craziness. But I think that more importantly, that each one will have a separate life, and we'll get a chance to follow that individual. This particular time, it's the life of the pastor. But I think what happens is pastor becomes the counselor for this group, and we get a chance to look at every one of their lives and all of their processes in order to reach their goal, and watch them fall down and get back up again, and fall down and get back up again. And I think that's where the fun comes in. It's us having the ability to love these guys and their flawlessness. I mean, and their flaws, reaching and searching and trying to get to a point where they're flawless, but it doesn't happen.
Tell me about the environment for doing a show like this compared to 92 to 97, which was when Martin ran.
Ooh.
And then we had Martin and we had Rock, and Rock was very very issues oriented, and Martin was pretty much just about fun, I think.
Yeah.
It didn't have that kind of thing. But you know, there was two shows that you know, captured a pretty good size audience at mm-hmm. a time when the audience, the channels were narrow. We had mm-hmm. you know, I mean, Fox expanded us from three networks to four for basically.
Yes.
And now there's infinite number of channels, there's infinite number of web channels. Does it mean that you have a greater opportunity to sell a sitcom on this, or is it harder in some ways?
In some ways it's more difficult because there's more competition. In some ways it's easier because you have certainly more venues, more revenue streams. However, it appears that the more shocking you are, the more unique you are. You know, when American Idol hit, however, 12, 15 years ago when it hit, it dominated the air, so everyone duplicated that same show, whether it was dance or whether it was whatever it was. So anything that is different is exciting. People want different. They want unique. But then the networks become scary. It's like, well, whatever works, let's duplicate it so that because we know that we'll attract an audience. So in one sense, it's an advantage because there's so many more mediums. Like you said, there was a time when there were only 3.5 networks. But now there are so many other opportunities. However, what's going to make it interesting is how unique, and it seems like the more further you push the envelope, the more attention that you get. And we're seeing that in shows like Empire. We're seeing that in many of these shows that are just the more unique and special you are, the more it draws an audience. And I think it feeds into that social media thing. How do you call someone to do this? Did you see that? Did you see that? So now they're talking. And then there was a time when in those early 90s when we still worked with pagers, and that was something new. So now technology has broadened, has raised the playing field so much in so many different ways.
Yeah, we've gone from the booty page to the booty.
Oh, you can see the booty. First you flip the booty, now you look at the booty. It's frightening. You know, as kids, we used to sneak around and steal my dad's old Playboy magazines or Player magazines. Now it's on your hip. Kids push a button and they're exposed to everything. So nothing shocks anyone anymore because they're exposed to so much. So when you ask me questions like, will it offend anyone? We have kids being arrested for sexting because it's this pornography of a child. So this our communities, our homes, our family are just exposed to so much that I don't know what shocks us anymore.
The amount of money I get paid for doing Mr. Media, that would be tell me about kind of making this move, and it's been over the course of years. I mean, on Martin, of course, you were kind of the sidekick, if that mm-hmm. doesn't offend. You were, you know.
Not at all.
You played second banana to Martin. Mm-hmm. In the club, you're the leading guy. And mm-hmm. and to see you, I mean, it's kind of hard to look at you today and realize – I mean, we've all, you know, I mean, it's been a number of years. I mean, you look like a leading man today. You look like your age. You look, I mean, you carry it. Was it difficult over time to convince casting agents and directors and such to put you in a position of not being the second banana kind of guy, but to think of you, you know, as a guy who could lead, as that guy?
You know, I played sports all my life. I was always in church and I was always a part of a team. So it never bothered me. In fact, the pressure was on Martin to be funny. I could just be Tommy. The pressure was on Martin to have a joke. I could just be Tommy. So there was no problem at all for me in that transition. In fact, when I left Martin, I went to the New York undercover because I'm really a dramatic actor. That drama is my thing. But at the time, in the early 90s, there were no black dramas, so I had to do whatever it required to work. So I studied theater. So theater was my thing. Whether it was a comedy, whether it was a drama, whether it was a classical, we were trained to be actors. So no, it was not a big challenge. Neither was it a big request to go, I got to go to leading man. I'm not the average guy. I'm 6'4", 300 pounds. And there's not a whole bunch of cats like me in Hollywood. The average stud in Hollywood is 5'8", 5'9". So I tower over these guys. So I'm not surprised it wasn't a goal to say, you know, I've got to be the leading man. I just love working. I love performing. And it didn't matter if it was a lead role or a supporting role. I just wanted to work. I still enjoy just working. The last 5 years alone, I've done over 20 movies. And most of them are small, low-budget films. But I'm happy because I'm doing what I love doing.
All right, so here comes the Martin stuff.
All right.
So how did you land that role, by the way?
Martin and Tommy were the only two that had our own real names on the show because we were real buddies in real life. Played ball every day. I would go watch him do comedy. He'd come watch me do theater. We did his very first play together. Now, I've been in the theater since I was 17 years old professionally. So we brought our friendship, our brotherhood from real life into television. So that transition was not very difficult at all. So it began by us first having a great friendship, mm-hmm. and then that transitioned into working together.
And how did that friendship endure? I mean, Martin had some tough times in the latter episodes of the latter seasons of the show. You know, I don't want to replay all that, but was it hard?
Difficult thing about watching people you love go through transition is watching the people you love go through transition, meaning that all I can do is say, I'm here for you and I love you and I support you. And it's hurting me to see you in pain. And particularly when those on the outside perceive it, because the media's perception is not necessarily reality. So when you see reality and go, that's not how that happened. That's not really what's going on. It pains us even more. We're still friends. He'll be in Atlanta this week doing comedy, and I'm going to be right there. I already spoke to his folk. He'll be right there so I can hug his neck and say, I love you, brother. I'm proud of it. Keep up the good work. It doesn't stop. Those friendships don't stop. Love doesn't stop. And that's what I'm excited about.
Even when he co-starred with Kelsey Grammer, you still loved him then?
Even when he co-starred with Kelsey Grammer, because I'm sure somebody had to write a really big check.
Yeah. Good point. All right. That's fair enough. Well, the show obviously lives on in reruns. How do you want that show to be remembered? In what way?
It's absolutely frightening to me what I'm seeing now. We stopped filming Martin in 1997. 18 years ago. And 18 years ago, I walk into an elementary school today, and kids are going, you got a job? There's Tommy. You weren't even born 18 years ago. So this is what I mean when I talk about ministry. When a choice that we make can change, affect, alter, influence another life, that's ministry. So what I do with this influence determines my role. So I spent a great deal of time visiting kids, and I write children's books, and I read to kids, and spending a great deal of time using that influence to help empower and to change lives. So how does it affect me? It blows my mind to see that here we are, nearly 20 years when we completed this show, more than 25 years since we started this show, and to have it still be relevant, to be on 3-4 networks at one time, I had no clue. We had no clue. All we wanted to do was do the best work we could to make our communities proud. And that's our only goal. We had no idea that here we are, you know, 25 years later, and we'd still be affecting lives. It's amazing.
So what's next for you?
Wow, what's next? There's so many amazing things happening. Been directing and producing films, have about three or four films that I have completed and in the process of selling the networks and getting offers from distributors and things. I have one called Conflict of Interest, is a wonderful story. Another one called Switching Lanes and Project E. Rice, Clowning in Kansas and Breezes and all kind of stuff. Folks can go to my website, TommyGotAJob.com, and take a look at some of the teasers and trailers of some of the wonderful things. Then, in addition to the entertainment industry, I spent a great deal of time in schools and empowering folk. This week we'll be at another festival, the next few days we're going to be in the festival here in Miami, the Miami Web Fest. But this coming weekend we'll be in a Christian festival called Kingdomwood, and have a few films in that one. And then I'll also fly this weekend to Washington, D.C. and do a March for Peace for Kids in the wake of all the violence going on around this country, to say that you are powerful and you are beautiful and you are amazing. Let's invest in your beauty and your power. Let's not waste it. Let's not send it to the graveyard. So using that influence to empower is what's next. And then having the ability to take the influence to create more projects that could potentially influence. So those are the things that are next for me, and I'm having a ball.
All right. Well, folks, you can watch Tommy Ford's new 6-part web series, The Club, for free on YouTube. Just search, in quotes, probably the easiest way, The Club. Unless there's an easier way to get to it, Tommy.
That's the easiest way I know.
All right. And then your website, again, is Tommy...
TommyGotAJob.com.
All right. And can people find you on Twitter or Facebook? Do you do any of that stuff?
Absolutely. Just go to Big Tommy Ford at Big Tommy Ford.
All right. Every time you say your name, it sounds like you want people to come down and buy a car.
Exactly. Come on, meet me. Go see Kyle. Go see Kyle. Go see Kyle.
Right down here. I'll be waiting for you under the
big
oak tree. Right here at Big Tommy Ford.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Tommy Ford, I know how hard you worked to make this interview happen today.
Yes,
sir. Thank you. Poor guy is sweating like you have no idea, folks. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Media, and good luck with the club.
Thank you so much. God bless you, Doc. And Mom, he didn't mean to curse. He really didn't.
Recorded live before a studio audience full of cheating cheaters who want to cheat until they get caught cheating, or longer, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.